my call, which would be WS2N@ARRL.net, or it's spacenetreport@gmail.com. Back to you, Dick.
Quite good, Paul. As I read that Applied Physics Laboratory report, this PDF report, about the New Horizons spacecraft and the Applied Physics Laboratory, I think they were the main designer of the thing. So you're reading the report of the guys that did the design. And I was just like you, looking for the power output of the traveling wave tube, which was not told. However, I think the RTG, radioactive thermoelectric generator, in the beginning of the mission, could put out something like 250 watts. It's guaranteed to put out something close to 200 watts throughout most of the mission. And they tell you which units on board, which assemblies draw how much power. And I think they said that the traveling wave tubes draw primary power of 135 watts. Now, whether that's both tubes at once or one of the tubes, I'm not sure. From that, I was estimating that the traveling wave tube might put out as much as 20 watts. I think you said it was 12. I do remember them also saying, let me drop this. One of the portions of the report said that they could make the bit rate as high as 600 bits per second. Whether or not that's using both tubes at once is not quite clear. They did say that after the flyby of Jupiter, correction, Pluto, it's going to take something like 160 days to transmit all the data down at the normal rate. And if they're able to use both tubes at once, that they can lower that down to 88 days to transmit all the data. And the data is not going to be transmitted down sequentially. In other words, they're going to take what they consider high priority data and send that first. But for all the data, I seem to remember that it said something like 160 watts. They did say that there was a mode of operation where they could use both tubes at once, combine the data on the ground. And I had trouble thinking about that one. If you're putting the two tubes in parallel, then you've got to be very careful with the phasing of the tubes to make sure they add together. And one of the nasty characteristics of a traveling wave tube is that minor changes in power supply voltage that's applied to the cathode of a traveling wave tube can make some pretty large changes in the phase of the RF signal that comes out of the tube. Let me drop it.
Is that why they're using the shunt regulators instead of series?
I don't think so. I know that one of the articles I've read a zillion years ago told me that a shunt regulator can give you a little bit better regulation than series. And I'll bet you there's something about an RTG that wants to see a nearly constant load. So with a shunt regulator, you will always see a constant load. That's a guess on my part. Second of all, the shunt regulator, all of the current that it's shunting is going into heat. Maybe that's being used simultaneously as a kind of heater for certain critical portions of the spacecraft. However, as I was starting to say, whenever you're combining two TWTs, and a buddy of mine were involved in such an operation 15 or so years ago, we were worried about a electronic news gathering truck that used a pair of traveling wave tubes that had to be summed in phase for the uplink of a KU band link. And the proper phasing of those two tubes was a little bit critical, and any variation of the voltage on the power supply would disturb the daylight out of that phase. You could end up with the two tubes running out of phase instead of in phase with each other. Let me drop. You just said some magic words, Paul, and that is the two transmitters can be used for horizontal and vertical. And they did say specifically in the APL report that the combination of the two signals would take place on the ground. And I was having great trouble figuring that out, because whenever you put two tubes in parallel, they got to be in phase, otherwise the signals don't add up correctly. If you're putting the two tubes into two separate portions of the antenna, and you want the signal to act as a phased array, again, you're very phase sensitive. However, if one tube is feeding a horizontal polarization out of the antenna, and the other tube is feeding vertical polarization out of the antenna, now the horizontal signal and the vertical signal, depending on whether they're in phase, which means you make perfect circular polarization or slant linear polarization, or if they're out of phase, you make up elliptical polarization by way of the polarimetry characteristic of the Goldstone 240-foot dish. If the dish has separate horizontal and vertical probes, and now you can select the combination of those two probes to be in phase, out of phase, or whatever, now you are really doing the combining on the ground. Maybe that's what they're doing. One TWT is going to feed horizontal, other TWT is going to feed vertical, and now I understand what they're saying when they said they're doing the combining on the ground. Until what you just said earlier, I couldn't figure out how the combining on the ground took place. So I'd like to you for any comments on all of the above, Paul. And by the way, July 14th, I think, is a Tuesday local time when the flyby is going to take place. WS2N, the space report, KQLIW, the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Now, the way I read it was right-hand circle polarization and left-hand if they run the two together. So that's kind of like what I got out of it. Let me put it this way. I looked for the two of them running in phase, and I could not find anywhere where they said that they would be in phase in that article. It looks like it's either right-hand or left-hand circle of polarization. They're going to do it a different way. I don't know. But how do you get twice the amount of information down? It's Tuesday, I'm sorry. Not next week. Next Tuesday is the time when I'm going to do that. I just want to mention, before you go on about the traveling wave tubes again, one thing I did forget is you have three people on the space station, and they did have a launch last Friday, and that was like 1 o'clock in the morning of a progress vehicle from Russia. So now they've got another 5,000 pounds worth of stuff up there, enough food and water extra for about a month or so. So they were good for October, that gives them to November, and then you have another one going up in August from Japan, which is going to have a lot more food and a lot more water than maybe a couple of extra months after that. And you do have a crew going up on the 22nd of July, Soyuz launch, so then they can bring their group up to six astronauts on board the space station back to the way they wanted. And it should have been like that a while back, but all these problems with the other progress, and now with Falcon, has delayed six men on board the station, and they've had three for a long period of time. They need six to do a lot more science. So, back to your traveling wave tubes, if you want to take this WS2N.
When it comes to circular polarization and various kinds of elliptical polarization out of an antenna, many electronic engineers, some antenna engineers, have quite a bit of trouble with that one. I've studied that quite a bit because I built circular polarized feed horns of, in theory, high performance when I built the feed horn for listening to the Apollo 15 and Apollo 16 astronauts. And that was a circular polarized signal that they were sending down. Now, the nice thing about polarization, orthogonality of polarization, a horizontal feed horn and a vertical feed horn, or a horizontal probe and a vertical probe in a feed horn, are two polarizations at right angles to each other. They're called orthogonal. Or you can set up things in such a way that one probe gives you circular polarization clockwise, and another probe gives you circular polarization counterclockwise. And now the interesting question happens as to when you combine these with various phase shifts and amplitude variations, what really happens? Let me drop. If I've got a horizontal and a vertical, and I feed them equal amount of power, and if the power I feed them is 90 degrees out of phase, that will be circular polarization. And depending on which one leads and the other one lags, it'll be clockwise or counterclockwise. All of that's predictable. If I've got a probe that launches clockwise and another probe that launches counterclockwise, that's another orthogonal decoupled signal technique. And what happens when you combine a clockwise wave and a counterclockwise wave? The amplitude gets linear. Ain't that crazy? A horizontal vertical linear combined with a right phase shift gives you circular. Clockwise circular combined with counterclockwise circular gives you linear. So if there is two separate TWTs, one of them feeds a clockwise probe and the other feeds a counterclockwise probe, you don't really have to worry about the phase shift between the two, because depending on that phase shift, you get a linear polarization that'll either be slant right, slant left, or whatever, depending on the phase shift between the two. So the two signals are now coming down to the ground, to the Goldstone dish, and as long as the Goldstone dish has complete polarimetry characteristic, and almost every good radio telescope these days does, let me drop, by setting up the proper phase shift and the way you combine those two signals, you can now get all the signal back. So I see how, if they do have enough power on board to transmit with both TWTs simultaneously, 160 days of downlink of all the data becomes 88 days, I think I read. And something else I read along these lines, I did read someplace where they thought they could transmit 600 bits per second, but by making a rough estimation of the power being in the vicinity of 12 watts in the downlink, and they did say that the dish is either 2 meters or 2.1 meters, it's a little bit more than 6.8 feet in diameter, I can now figure out the gain of the dish, the power output, therefore I know how strong the signal is going to be at Goldstone, and I estimated that they're going to be running in the vicinity of, I think I first estimated 600 bits per second. So, in that ballpark. So it's going to take them as much as 160 days or 88 days to transmit all the data. And that is a little bit scary, though, that the computer had to be switched at almost the 11th hour. And let's hope that the computer they switched to is in better shape. The computer that so-called failed, was it just getting a high bit error rate, or did it really go into some kind of a complete failure? Since you said the bird went quiet for a while, probably had a complete failure, and then it went into a recovery mode and said, here I am, I've woken up. Is that approximately what happened, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW, the TechNet.
WS2N, yeah, no Horizon is autonomous, quite, I mean, it's a robot. It shut itself down when it detected a problem, and then a couple hours later it brought itself back up with a different computer, computer B. And right now, as we speak, the information is coming back. It's sending the data, but it's sending, it's not sending data about pictures or what the planet is made of. It's sending housekeeping information about its health, about the spacecraft's health, and what it detects. And it's being applied physics group. Exactly what they want to see right now is what's wrong with this thing. But I mean, they plan on sending it back to the original computer. I don't know if it's working. If the signal comes back and it's working, I would tell the spacecraft to, you know, leave well enough alone. It's nice to get it all working on, you know, properly. But I mean, if it's true redundancy, what's the difference? So they don't know the answer yet. Sending that information back now.
So, as I see it, they're really worried about the health and make sure that everything's in the best health position during the encounter. I know that Voyager, which is three times the distance of Pluto, has something like a 37-hour round-trip time. I'm guessing that at the time of encounter, New Horizons will have something in the vicinity of 12 hours of round-trip communication time.
Five.
What was that again, Paul?
9.5 hours round-trip.
Beautiful. So any commands they give it, and it says, okay, I did it, you need 9.5 hours to get your hands in. Oh, boy. So you got to ask it just the right questions, because you don't start getting answers for 9.5 hours later. That's amazing at the speed of light. And your positioning of the satellite has got to be accurate to the nearest couple of tenths of a degree, because at 8.5 gigahertz, that 2-meter dish is something in the vicinity of a 1-degree bandwidth. Double-sided bandwidth is something like 1 degree. And to get full gain out of that 1 degree, you've got to be to the nearest couple of tenths of a degree of accuracy. I think the satellite also is in a gyroscope rotating mode. Is that true, Paul? WS2N, KQRIW?
Yeah, I would imagine they're going to be coming out of that soon. You know, they have that, have it stabilized to do all the fixes that, you know, they're not going to have the thing spinning when they go past the planet. So, what time they change that, I don't know. And by the way, they don't change it. It's all pre-programmed. New Horizon will do that.
It sounds to me like they got two computers on board. They put the exact same program in both computers. And there's a whole lot of self-survival subroutines in that computer where when it sees certain errors, it knows beyond a certain error rate to flip over to the other computer and to start talking back to the ground. Is that approximately what happens up, Paul? Go ahead.
Yes, that's the way I read it. Very similar to the Ulysses mission. There's a lot of similarities to that mission in Mars Observer, which... Well, they lost that one, but they had similar markings on that, up with the other ones. But half a dozen deep space probes, similar line to this. Way, you know, they know all this stuff is tried and true and it all works.
Now, as it flies by Pluto, it's something like 7,500 miles away. I remember the right number. You've now got a whole bunch of choices. By that I mean, you can fly by 7,500 miles away, 500 miles away, on the eastern side, the northern side, the southern side. As you do a flyby, you're going to get a gravity assist boost in velocity. That's good news. But the minor variations of where you do the flyby determines how your trajectory gets deflected. And I know that after the flyby of Jupiter, they are in the talking phase of what other Kuiper belt, or what do you call it? Is it Oort cloud or Kuiper belt? I think it's Kuiper belt. What other Kuiper belt object they might fly by? I think the possibility exists that the New Horizons might be in full operation in the year 2025, 2030. So if they direction of flyby of Pluto, it'll help them have the brand new trajectory which aims them toward the next Kuiper belt object they might get a chance to observe. I wonder if you got some impressions on that one, Paul. WS2N, KQRIW.
Yes, this thing whizzes by Pluto at, I think, 30,000 miles an hour. I think they've got 15 minutes to do all their work. So, and then after that, as it goes by, it's got to be looking at the planet and make all these adjustments. And anything I've read, there's no gyroscopes, no inertia wheels spinning. Thing has thrusters on board that can work, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of ons and offs. You know, just very tiny, small thrusters and then larger ones. So I give these guys a lot of credit. I mean, for any of these spacecraft to do that kind of work, especially in flyby, in orbit, you know, you got time to do things. I mean, they got to have everything just right, one shot, and that's it. Then it goes out to the Kuiper belt, and they're looking at two different Kuiper belt objects that they want to look at when they get out there in a couple of years. I was hoping to see that. Now, you know, after hearing this glitch that came up, I'll be happy to get all the information back on Pluto and Charon, the moon, the difference between the moon and Pluto, and I saw what John was talking about, and I'm interested to see what all this looks like close up. Back to you, Dick, WS2N.
I haven't been checking in the last couple of days, but I know that the NASA site on New Horizons, I think they give you the newest photographs they've gotten in the downlink each couple of days. So I'm guessing they stopped sending photographs because now the health of the system is much more important. So you got to make sure that everything is in good working order as it does the flyby, because there absolutely positively is no chance to flyby and say, hey, we missed something, let's go back. Can you imagine, Paul, if somebody decided, let's go back and do another flyby? Imagine how much energy it would take of rocket power to do that. WS2N, KQRIW.
I read what it would take to put this thing into orbit. You need 1,000 times the amount of mass that this medicine weighs, like 2,000 pounds or something. You need 1,000 times that mass of fuel just to slow itself down to put itself into orbit. So that's kind of like equivalent to what you're saying. So that's the reason they're not going to do anything. I would have liked to have seen, like, you know, some kind of a land to go down, you know, and have something separate, go down and just even crash into the planet or something, because you'd still never be able to slow that thing down enough to do anything. It's all good. We'll see what happens. What's it, Tuesday? Next Tuesdays from now.
Now, in the last decade, we did put a spacecraft in orbit around Jupiter. We put a spacecraft in orbit around Saturn. I think one of them is called Galileo. I forgot the name of the other one. But in both of those cases, as you approach the planet, you get to do a retro burn to slow down to get into orbit. I vaguely remember that retro burn lasted for some ridiculous length of time, like an hour or two. It took a lot of fuel to do that, to slow down. And New Horizons doesn't have that capability. So do you remember how long the burn was in order to go into orbit around Jupiter or Saturn? What were you called?
There's a big difference between a little less than 2,000 pound New Horizon and a Cassini's one that's still flying around in orbit around Saturn, and that's as big as a school bus. And you've got Galileo, that was in the 90s. That mission is orbiting. That was very successful, even though it had a broken antenna. Parabolic antenna didn't fold right, so they used everything off the medium dish antenna, and it destroyed that eventually, let it burn up in the atmosphere of Jupiter. Very successful. Great pictures of all the planets, all the moons. And now we have another one going there called Juno, and that will be next year that will go into orbit. That will be a polar orbit around Jupiter. But all these things, you're right, something like 45 minutes, I think, on one of them, and the other one was like 90 minutes, like you said. I mean, it just keeps burning and burning and to slow itself down to get into orbit around these planets. They're large planets. It does take a lot of fuel to slow itself down.
The good news is that New Horizons is moving very fast and got there in a hurry. The bad news is that to go into orbit around Pluto, now got to slow down from 34,000 miles an hour, I think is the number. I am guessing to go into orbit around Pluto, you'd have to slow down to something like 8,000 miles an hour. And that's a big delta V. That would take a lot of fuel. So I think New Horizons had to be done in a hurry with a very limited amount of funds, borrowing electronics from other programs. And though I guess the ability to do all of that going into orbit was out of the question. It sure would have been nice to go into orbit around Pluto and spend a season there to get a full orbit of Pluto around the Sun. I think it's 270 years, but you know what I mean. Pluto must have some kind of a fractional season, but no way in hell do they have anywhere near the resources to do that retro burn, is my guess. Over you, Paul. Can't you realize anything?
Oh, no. You'd have to have... They said the craft would be 1,000 times greater than what it is now, so filled with fuel. Same size craft, you know, but, you know, multiply that times 1,000. So you can imagine the lift vehicle that it would take to get it there. We don't have that, and even if you did, it would take a long, long time to get to where it is. And yeah, you got something like 270 years. What that thing gets around, one whole turn around the Sun. We'll see. Come back a couple hundred years from now and see if they do this again. Wondered how long the RTGs would last. I read two. Last two were 20, 48. That's a minimum. And by the time it gets out to 100 AU, that's roughly three times the distance from where it is now, south to, let's call it 100 EU, roughly where they are now. It'll be going around 8,000 miles slower. So voyages, will, you know, they're going to always win. No matter what we send out, you can't catch it. We got a, you know, faster than light thing to go. 8,000 miles an hour, slower than the voyages, at 100 AU. You know, it will go out to the heliosphere and all and study that and get out there by 28 in the heliosphere to play there.
We're getting a little shy on time, but right now, Horizon funding good for another year or so in order to collect all the data. And is there a proposal for funding to turn the project back on as it approaches the next Kuiper Belt project, Kuiper Belt object? Over you, Paul. KQLAW.
I haven't heard that funding was even cut or anything. As far as I know, they're to go, you know, for around 3 or 4 years until they do the Kuiper Belt. You know, they consider that the extended mission, but it's still on the table. I don't think that's been cut.
The one thing that I see is that if all the downlink data from New Horizons takes somewhere between 88 days and 160 days, that's a whole lot of time of the Goldstone dish, DS-14, one particular point in space, at the exclusion of all other spacecraft they'd like to be monitoring. So, I'm having trouble believing that the 160 days of downlink is not continuous time of downlink. Maybe it's going to be 10 hours per day, so to speak. I didn't read that in the report. I'm actually full KQLAW.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I find that out. But, you know, that means constant transmitting. You want to do that? You'll probably give up, you know, the traveling wave tube to rest, I would think. Although with all those hours, they did say something about 45,000 hours compared to the 275,000 hours that it would be good for. I think we only need 45,000. And I did see the 88-day that you spoke about on that article that you sent me. I think we're out of time. Back to you, Dick. Get to our IWWS to win.
Yeah, 88 days to get all the data in the downlink if you're able to use both tubes at once, both traveling wave tubes, and something like 160 days if not. You guys have just heard technician number 1,563 of the series, 50th of September of 1982. Kind to each other. We'll be back next week. We'll be real excited for the New Horizons flyby, which will be coming up two Tuesdays from now. Bye-bye, you all. And John? Pass it up to you for any final comment. KCWGB, thank you. KQRW, the deck net.
Very good, Dick. Nice net today. Very good. And if you get a chance, Dick, take a look at that email I sent you, a little information on that road trip. And I want to thank everybody again this week for joining us on the net, and look forward to talking to all of you again next week. No, and be kind. KC2WGB, clear.
73, John. If anybody has a tablet, they download the app Pluto Safari, S-A-A-R-I. Free. Give you all the information. Have a countdown to a couple of Tuesdays from now. Did want to mention that. Great app. It's free. And they give all kinds of information on the spacecraft and where it is in 3D in space. It's unbelievable. WS to include. Take care, John. Dick.
73, Paul. Yeah, great stuff, and I can't wait to see those photographs. I just hope they get all that junk working again in the proper way. And I hope the backup computer identical, not sure, but we'll hope KC2 doesn't.
I've been following this since probably 20 years ago when they thought about it. They used to call it Pluto Express, and they canceled the mission of no money, and then one thing led to another, and then they came out with the 79.
Have a lot more information. Find out how it's going to go. Have fun, Paul.
What is the name of the app? It's Pluto Safari. Pluto Safari. S-A-F-A-R-I. Very good. And it's free. Okay, thank you, K2QR.
have to order a new microphone for this radio. The push-to-talk button fell off it, and it won't stay on.
And how are you talking?
I have to hold the microphone with the push-to-talk button straight up, so I grab it, and then I can turn it towards my face. But if I let go of it while it's facing me and the push-to-talk button is down, it falls out.
Sounds like Rich has a problem.
Sounds like a personal problem. This is Kevin Keene, doing it mobile. Where are you now, Jerry?
I am approaching.
Very noisy.
In the noisy zone, and I'm not that far behind him.
Well, when your mic works, you sound okay.
Oh, I'm just about to go underneath the Long Island Snail Road overpass.
Steve still has that alternator wine. Mine's all the time.
What?
Hey, I was talking to Grandpa a little while ago. Saw his good buddy, Amber, and didn't bother to get a copy of his code plug. So you're still SOL until you get a hold of our good friend, the Hyundai salesman.
SOL for what? What am I SOL?
To have that Motorola updated with new information.
Oh. Okay. I call him any time and come somewhere to drop it off. It's really not a problem. I'm just not running after him.
Maybe you could get a hold of him and ask him to email it to you so that you could do it yourself.
Perhaps. Some camp buses are getting loaded up by the Macy's. I have an alternator wine this morning. Okay. I really this weekend, so I believe I got the AC blast and maybe that's what's dipping the voltage a little bit. Hold up. Is this better?
We're on the other band. I'm going to the tunnel at 2:30 p.
Thank you, Gary. I'm there. Spot here, but I was yachting yesterday.
KB2NQN, N2PPN.
I was over by Marathon Parkway. I just couldn't make the machine.
This button falling out is a very annoying thing.
I was yachting yesterday.
It was great. I had both female counterparts of my family unit with me. And we had a good time, but I had a little issue before we went out. I had, pulled the boat out, put it in front of the house, had it hooked up to the Avenger, and I hooked the hose up to it, started it up, let it warm up a little bit, make sure everything is good before going out. And number one carb, for some reason or another, the float got stuck in the whole open position, so had to pull the carb off, take it apart, cleaned out the needle and seats, checked float action and everything, and was quite happy to see that the inside of the bowl was spotless. So I've been taking good care of my fuel system, I guess.
Okay, so why did it hang up?
No idea. It could be because the engine was forward tilted, not sitting in normal vertical position. It was on the transom saver. Maybe the float just got stuck. I don't know. But I didn't see any dirt. I didn't see any, anything hanging up the needle or anything. So put it all back together. Everything was good. I had pulled the plugs, cleaned the plugs, put everything back together, and no more dripping gas out of the vent. And then having it run down and choke everything out.
Yeah, at least you caught it while you were on land and you had all your tools and you weren't out on the water with
My daughter actually said, wow, maybe we could come back out and you could pull me around in the tube.
Okay. I was thinking about it yesterday, but the tide was low in the morning. And, you know, it was Sunday of July 4th weekend. That's one of the stellar weekends I like to go out. Any amateurs out there? So, it was a Corvette Sunday.
Oh, yeah. There were plenty of amateurs, but, you know, most of the amateurs were on jet skis. That's what I've been noticing. Most of the amateurs are out on jet skis. They're not in boats. And we had our share of hilarious ramp watching as, you know, I was loading in and loading out. It was cool. Some guy took his Audi. He had the jet ski on the trailer. Came right down the middle of the ramp, not near either of the floating docks, and proceeded to back the Audi bumper high into the water.
Nice. Very nice.
It was hilarious watching the exhaust pipes burble underwater.
Okie dokie. Yeah, that'll ruin your day, that's for sure. But what the story was with the bunk.
No, he wasn't drunk. I think he was just totally inexperienced with a short-ton trailer and trying to, you know, his jet ski close enough to the dock so that you push it off the bunk trailer and you just float it over to the dock, tie it up, and, you know, get your trailer and vehicle out of the water. Oh, I gotta look for a parking spot. Thank you, BPN. I'll be back.
Dirty Purple Zombies.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hey.
If that's you, you have no audio.
We have audio. 1-6-3-4-5.
Now you have audio. Go ahead.
Intermit. Are we intermit or what?
I'm hearing you now.
I'll be back.
Casey, Stevie. Intermission. I'll catch you later, Stevie. And 2 PPM.
Got it all done. Well, how
I'll be monitoring because I think you're having troubles there. So I'll be on the side, H2AMZ. 60BZ. Up there, Hal.
MZ, KD2, MZ, K60PZ, are you copying, Mike? KD2, MZ,
60PZ. K60PZ, are you still there, Hal?
Yeah, go ahead.
Alrighty, Hal. Hey, like I said, buddy, I couldn't make it. I had so much work I had to accomplish. It was literally pathetic, but we got it all. Everything from painting to masonry to electrical to plumbing, but I got it all done.
Sounds good, Mike. Mike, give me a chance. Give me a call on the Twister. I want to tell you about a few things.
I'll do that when I get back to Virginia, because I got to pull out the cell phone and just, you know, and dial on the road. But I will call you from Virginia. Does that work by you?
Yeah, sure, Mike. It works. Listen, the best time is after in the evening. I got my Oceanside phone number, don't you?
Well, I got both Queens, I got your cell phone, and I got your Oceanside. So I'm going to reach out to you from Virginia. Copy that?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I wish I had a chance to see you. I was going to give you something to give my daughter. It just didn't work out.
Al, I'm still expecting you down in Virginia. You got all the time in the world these days. Al, I apologize. I would have done it for you. But literally, we were working from the moment we got up to the moment we went to bed. The weather was so nice, it never stopped.
Oh, I can understand. I can understand fully, Mike. Mike, let me get back to what I'm doing. I have an intermittent time on the other rig downstairs. That was the whole problem. I just grab this one real fast to get back to you and let you know that it's going to go off the side of the earth.
Hey, yeah, I copy you, Hal. I just want to let you know whatever you're doing had a bad connection to the mic, it sounded like. But anyways, buddy, I'm going to leave you be. You go do what you got to do. I'm going to call you from Virginia. That's the way things worked out, Hal. All right, buddy, but I am going to call you when I get to Virginia. If not tonight, then maybe tomorrow or something like that.
Hey, Mike, no problem. Whenever you have a chance, there I'll be able to share a few things with you. You'll find very interesting.
Copy. All right, KD2AMZ, I'll be clear and on the side. Al, you got a good one. Have a good one there, buddy. Take it easy. KD2AMZ clear.
Okay, Mike, where are you located right now? You're already on your road south, I gather.
YSK listening.
Hi, good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Andy. I didn't know if you heard me say let's go down to 2. Maybe you'd be better there. But I guess you are. So, hope you had a good 4th, and Phil should be here any second.
Yes, I am. KD2C. Yeah, we lost you up there, so I figured you probably still heard us. But we took a shot and came down here.
Thanks. Very okay. They are permanent in the battery. ICOM 208A, I don't need that, but I gotta get that wire. In the meantime, after wire, the AC broke, so I just got a new one. Battery. Back for more power. So I can get out on the radio, on the new radio, but I won't be able to get a signal if my antenna's not long enough, so I think I cut this when I'm listening.
Yeah, I'm sorry I stepped on you in the very beginning. Not too much, though. Go ahead, pick it up, Jake.
Go look at your car. The accessory outlet might have enough amperage. 15 amps is usually with air. And you can just buy a pair of, you know, a cigarette lighter, thumbnail, thumb screw sort of thing. And you'd attach it to there. I've never wired my third battery in the 5 years I've been running mobile units. Not a problem.
I can wire it right to the fuse box. Manual assist to go direct to the battery. Otherwise, it's like in a cigarette lighter, they could be off. Not probably the alternator, but it's a bad signal.
So I have a newer car, accessory outlet, they don't even call it a cigarette lighter anymore, is direct wired with its own fuse. Never had an issue with it.
That's interesting. I service department. When that lighter airs into something.
Go ahead, Phil. You take it, then I'll give him a place to go. Okay, Jay.
flying right now. I just turned on the Titira, going through the Olinko, but I can play, you know. So hopefully I'm coming through okay. Go ahead, continue the conversation. I'm moving around right now.
Now, great. Andy, I bought my adapter at Radio Shack, and there still are Radio Shacks around. It just looks like a serial lighter plug on one side and a couple of banana pin jacks with the screw caps on the other. And you just, you know, wrap your wire around those, tighten them up, plug it in. But if you have an old, you know, cigarette lighter power cord from an old spotlight or an old extension, and as long as it's, you know, decent gauge wire, you could just make your own. But I use those banana jack sort of things, and it works fine.
CA Mobile. Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. Just running myself around. Now, the main thing is, if you're going to draw a lot of current on a cigarette lighter jack, it's not the best thing to do. That's how much current you want to draw. If it's just for a little HT or something, you can get away with it. If anything that's heavy, I would not suggest it. K6?
Al, yeah, good to hear you. My accessory outlet is rated at 20 amps, so that is as strong as my power supply at home, so that's why I haven't had an issue.
But the problem is, Bernie, that when you plug into that accessory outlet, you're only making a pressure contact. You don't have a binding contact. And oxidation and everything can cause a lot of problems on that contact.
Hey, by the way, it's Jay, not Bernie. You do that to me all the time, Al.
Sorry, but you follow what I mean. When you're pushing in a cigarette lighter plug, you know, you only have that tip being held by pressure. And if it's not fully seated, you can build a lot of heat up on that contact and it oxidizes the contact.
That is true.
So, you know, you gotta watch it. It also uses a high quality jack, cigarette lighter jack, that has very good tension on its outside area as well as its inside. I've gone through all sorts of situations with that, with some of the government stuff I was involved with. Go ahead.
Alright, Jill, take it. Pass it to Andy. Back to Hal. And me.
Okay, KD2. So, Hal, you know what I wound up doing a lot of times when I go mobile? I take my battery bumper, hook it up right to that, so now I'm not even involved with the car until I decide how I want to run it straight to the battery. And I found that worked pretty well, too. I've done that a couple of times, and I don't get the hum when I go on high power. I'm sorry, not the cigarette lighter. That's not politically correct. Power port now. Over to you. I think Andy gets it.
Good morning, Hal. Thanks for that information. I know that in the manual it says to go right to the battery. I didn't know that some of these power adapters, cigarette lighter, kind of amperage pressure contacts were talking about. That's like just they have a relative line of one of those home mounted permanent wire running a wall. I don't have any questions. Especially, I don't want to put any
I'll tell you a good way to do it, and it works out phenomenally, and I've done this in government situations. You come in from the battery, get yourself a male and female Hubble twist lock plug, 20 amps, I think 30, Hubble twist lock plug. You put the female from the battery side, male on the equipment side, and when you push that plug in, it's a bayonet turn, and it will not come out. And it's a phenomenal plug for taking in and out of any high current mobile unit. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, that will work too. My cars have leased cars of late, so that's one reason, Andy, I really didn't run the wires to the batteries, because this is the third car I've had in the last 5 years. And my license, I was finishing one lease when I got my license. Radio sat on my console, plugged into the cigarette port. That car, it was great. The battery was in the trunk, and it was an accessory port wired right to it. So I just had that for 3 years, never had an issue. And this was another thing. But if I owned the car, I would do a permanent connector.
Hey, you're going to get in some laundry. I will be right back.
No, over to you.
Okay, Jay, thanks. And I didn't say good morning. How's my audio on this? I'm going to Tierra.
It's quite good. It's a little more trebly, but totally crisp and clear. Andy, you think?
fairly good to me. I got without any issues at all. What was that clip or that thing Hal was... Hal's doing laundry, he said he'd be back in a minute. What was the name of that clip or that adapter that he mentioned?
I don't know, Andy. I just got a call from Steve on DMR. I'll be right back. KC2R, stay on the side.
All right. Yeah, Steve's playing, like all of us. For the time being, it's me and you.
Yep. I was describing that clip that I used to attach to the battery. Do you remember what the name of that thing was?
No, I didn't catch that. I was, washing out my coffee cup, so I missed it.
347 just crossed 25A. That plane you repeated around here someplace. Their trip switching to Keldon and Glen Oaks, except once in a while.
Hey, Phil,
is it wrong?
No problem at all. You're coming good. One nice thing about 2 meters, it's a, you know, heavy's pretty deep, especially with the wing. No problem at all.
But thank you. It's getting Keldon. Farmingville actually is down that it's listed in our three. There's a lot of repeaters at icons and probably be useless. If I could get one of the red lighter adapters, that would be the current problem that's hardwired.
My KD2C does. Yeah, you know, I got the same problem. I don't want to hardwire anything in my wife's car because she used to have most of the time. My car, eventually I'll hardwire something in my car, but I don't drive that much. So for now, you know, it was okay on low power. On high power, you get the alternating. That's why I said what I did. I just took my battery, my jumper battery. I connected up to that, throw that in the pan. I connect that, and it holds up pretty well for my needs. I do it. I don't have to worry about alternating noise or anything else. That's how I solved that problem.
CP is back. Did the fellow get the name of that plug?
Yes.
Well, I have to give something in. Hubble Twist Lock, and they're great.
Put it down. Hubble, like the Hubble Telescope, Twist Lock.
Yeah, and you need about the 30-amp size. They're used normally on 220, and they're phenomenal because if you put the female against the battery side and the male on the equipment side, you know, you even at night when you can't even see, you just feel it, stick it right in.
After all, this twist plug is battery. You have to run a wire through the firewall.
Run a wire through the firewall, the end of the wire inside the vehicle, put the female Hubble twist plug, and then take the male and connect that to your power cable on your radio. And it's a fast disconnect, but yet it will not come out on you when it's plugged in, because being it's a bayonet type of a connector, once you twist it, it will stay in there. And they use it for a lot of applications. When I use them in certain applications, they work phenomenally.
Like a BNC, of course.
Yeah, on the same idea, that it has, it's round, the pins. The pins are like are curved. And you just plug it in, give it a twist, and you're in. And you can pull a small plug that will handle at least almost 35, 40 amps with no problem at all. They're not cheap. But it's a good way of going, and they put on very easily. To tell them at the ends of the wire is no big deal at all. They just screw the wire into it.
All right, Hal, thank you. Go ahead, Phil.
Mike, KD2C. I wrote that down. Hubble. Like the telescope. That was good. But, yeah, in fact, I may even look. You know, the hardest part is trying to find a place through the firewall. I'm sure I'll find something. That's what I may do, but like when I take my wife's car, and it has to, you know, I don't want to hear her, so it's fine. Everything is temporary. Al, good morning again.
Good morning. Now, I'm going to go ahead and grab something. I just figured I'd throw that in for what it's worth. I've done many installations in all types of vehicles. I found the best things in certain applications, and they really worked out. Gentlemen, I'll be back. I hope I'm getting over all the garbage. It's K60 Mobile.
Hey, Hal, have a good day. Back in.